This is the 9.8 Podcast. All right, welcome back to another episode here, 9.8 Podcast. Thank you for taking the time to take a listen. Today, wanted to tackle kind of some of the biggest myths within the fitness industry. We're going to come at it a couple of different ways here and hopefully touch on a couple of different industries or, you know, settings within the fitness industry. But basically, you know, piggybacking off of the last episode where I spoke about, you know, obviously within these times, you know, the dynamics of what your workout looks like is potentially changed. If you were somebody who was, you know, going to a gym, fitness studio, clinic, you know, whatever the case was for any sort of health and wellness service. Now you're stuck in home, things change. And obviously with everything being online and there's so many people that are, you know, providing content that it's kind of the season for misinformation. As far as, you know, there's always going to be misinformation spread, but, because there's so much content out there, that percentage seems to be higher nowadays. So, wanted to take a step back and make sure that you know exactly what to look out for as far as, you know, whether it's a specific workout you're getting for an individual or just kind of some principles to apply to your workout, you know, what to believe, what not to believe, who to trust, who not to trust. Because, like I said, the misinformation that's being spread, you know, regardless of topic and, you know, it's out there. So, I think I've got 12 of these that we'll go through here. In no particular order. I just kind of, these are some of the biggest things that have been brought up either to me personally or things that I found through talking with other trainers and coaches, things that they've run into. So we'll go just dive right in here. Again, no particular order. But the first one, it kind of hits home for me is, you know, the myth is that you need to look a certain way to be a trainer. Or a coach, we'll say. And the reason why it hits home for me, if you guys, the ones you guys out there who know me, I stand 5'4" off of the ground. I weigh about 150 pounds, give or take. So not a big guy. So a lot of people look at that as a negative. I'm like, all right, who's this small kid, you know, wants to teach me about strength training? Especially, you know, some of the athletes that I've worked with in the past and some of the athletic teams that I've worked with in the past, you know, definitely would give me that stigma of, like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about just because of the fact that I'm small in stature. And I think that kind of plagues the industry quite a bit, especially when you talk about, you know, trying to advance the role of women as fitness professionals. I feel like guys have a tough time taking strength training advice from women, which is, again, you can go back to episode 2 or episode 3, I can't remember now, where I talk about women, you know, and the roles in the fitness industry. But and it's just stupid that, you know, they would have that stigma attached to them as well. But basically the idea of you need to have some jacked dude be able to, you know, teach you about strength training, I think is just really dumb. I mean, yeah, if I'm a client, who do I want? You know, if I go to hire a personal trainer, do I just want this guy that's just jacked out of his mind and he's just going to tell me what works for him, talk about himself? And I say he because it's usually mostly guys that fit that bill. You know, he's going to talk about what works for him. He's probably going to make me do, you know, the workouts that he does. And he's not really going to put me first. It's going to always be him first. And you see that quite a bit. And people think that just because they're fit, it automatically qualifies them to, you know, instruct others on, you know, anything fitness. And, you know, I don't care what you look like. I don't care what you do as far as your background. If you go through a credentialed and accredited certification agency and you do your homework and you have the practical experience and, you know, you have a plan and you're able to articulate that plan, then I don't care what you look like, you know, that's really the only thing you need. Next, we'll let's move on, and this is kind of a twofer deal. I wrote these down as two different ones, but the myth being that men and women need to be trained differently. And while you'll see that a lot, you'll see, you know, client A and client B might be trained differently, and they might be, one might be a man, one might be a woman, but it's not because they're a man and a woman is why they're trained differently. It's because of, you know, different factors, different variables, because they're two different individuals. Again, that something that has gone back since what seems like the beginning of time is that women, if they want to, you know, get fit, if they want to lose weight, if they want to add muscle and lose weight, which is always kind of the thing that gets paired up, it's always the go-to of, okay, light weights, high reps, cardio heavy, and that's about it. Not a whole lot of variation to it. And with men, it's like, all right, with the heaviest thing possible, form be damned, and, you know, move it from point A to point B. I don't care what hurts, you know, do more. And I'm here to tell you, it's sometimes, you know, you take a little bit more of that first example. Sometimes you take a little bit more of that second example. I think you mostly live in between somewhere with just about everybody, and then you apply different variations and different stimuli to those individuals based on the assessment and their needs. But it's all based on how the individual presents, not just the fact that they're a man or a woman that dictates, you know, the program. You can't just sit down and say, okay, well, this is a woman, and I automatically know kind of how I'm going to train that person. It's been that way forever. And, you know, again, you can go back to my episode where I speak more about training women, but it's kind of been one of my crusades is being a voice and being a resource to hopefully change that stigma that women need to be trained so drastically different from men. And the one that I wrote down as a separate thing, but it kind of goes hand in hand with that, the myth being that strength training makes you bulky. And the reason why I say it kind of goes hand in hand with that is that especially female clients and female athletes have always kind of shied away from strength training. You know, one reason might be because trainers for so long have steered them away from it. But also the fear of being bulky. I think actually just about every female client I've had has brought that up in some way, shape, or form. You know, saying that, hey, this is way heavier than I've ever done before. You know, I don't want to look like the She-Hulk. And, you know, basically the idea behind it is to get full body engagement. I would always advocate for full body workouts from a functional standpoint. And that's kind of my individual training has been mostly geared towards that. And then using heavy resistance as a tool for the individual to learn exactly how their body is responding to a greater amount of resistance. And if done in the correct fashion, with the correct things, you know, the client thinking about the correct things in the lift, you know, they get a much greater full body output. And because they've got, obviously, like multiple muscle groups working at one time, they've got multiple joints and body parts moving at one time, you know, their entire body is getting a workout, and it's not just overloading on one isolated muscle. Those are the kind of things that kind of give you that bulkier feel, which I would always stay away from isolated stuff. And if we work on, you know, the multi-joint movements was kind of what I would hammer home the most. And that would usually keep us away because our body's working harder, our heart's pumping a little bit faster. Metabolism gets spiked up a little bit, and, you know, thus we're burning a little bit more fat, we're burning more calories, and those things kind of get regulated out. Now, again, I don't want to get too stuck in the weeds with that stuff because, again, I am not an expert in nutrition, so I don't want to go down that road, you know, when talk about burning calories and all that stuff, because it is different for everybody. But, you know, again, just the, you, you can't generalize and say strength training is going to make me bulky, so I'm going to stick away from it, and I'm just, you know, meet me at the, you know, cardio machine. All right, let's move on here. Again, kind of going into nutrition, I won't dive into that part of it, but the myth being that, you know, diet be damned, as long as I work out enough and burn more active calories, you know, I'm going to lose weight. And I'm here to tell you, just because of, again, I'm not an expert in that nutrition field, but based on all of the clients that I've worked with that have been through this, you know, I don't think I've seen one client that has been able to out-train a bad diet. And, you know, we would talk about, you know, specifically, you know, what their diet looks like, what kind of things they like to do. And you can burn as many calories, and, you know, there's active calories burned, there's resting calories burned, and you're not going to change that resting calories burned long term by just working out a shit ton and still eating like crap. You know, again, you might lose weight in the short term, but, you know, who wants to do that? It's just, I think most people that are looking for weight loss are looking for a long-term solution, and, you know, you've got to start with what you're putting into your body. And that's why, you know, clients that may be listening to this that I've worked with in the past or work with currently know this about me. You know, if I had a client and they said their main goal is weight loss and they want, you know, they don't really care about the workouts necessarily, they want to come to me for nutritional help. And, you know, as much as I'm a resource to be able to provide them, you know, as much knowledge as I have on that, I keep going back to this, I'm not an expert in that field. So I would basically say, hey, I can't really help you. I'm more than happy to help you as far as the things you're doing in the gym. But, you know, I can't train you because weight loss is, I would say, I don't know what percentage to put on it, 75, 80, 70, I don't know where that falls, but I would say a vast majority of that controlled variable is in their hands. The ball is in their court. So as a fitness professional, I've got a potential business coming in, and the success of that business, the success of the service that I'm providing, I can only control a minority of it. I'm not interested. So a client comes into me and, you know, weight loss is their only goal. And, you know, I have zero control over what they're putting into their body. They probably are resistant to change as far as that goes. They just want to, like you said, out-train the bad diet. And, you know, basically I want no part of that client because, or at least I want no part of that goal, as far as, you know, I'm going to be measured on success based on whether or not they eat well, which they're, you know, if they showed any signs of resistance to change as far as that goes, you know, they're going to now view me as a bad trainer because they haven't lost weight, because they haven't eaten well, even though we've come in and we've done the work in the gym. You know, I always give the example of, you know, we can have an awesome session, but you go home, you chase it with a whole pack of Oreos, and then all of a sudden my product is devalued in their eyes. All right, and then last one here for this segment, the myth being that being tired or sweating a lot is a sign of a good workout. And this is kind of, you get this from two ends of the spectrum, both from the client or athlete and from the trainer and or coach. I guess we'll say trainer. It's one of the biggest pet peeves I have when I have been able to observe other trainers or work with other trainers is that, you know, they get such like a hard on about making somebody sweat and making somebody super tired, and then like they puff their chest out and be like, yeah, I'm a sweet trainer, like you're exhausted. And I'm like, that's the only metric that you're giving yourself to like measure whether or not that was a successful session with the client? Like, just because you made them tired, like you could have had the most like terrible programming. That client could have done a horrible job executing those exercises that you prescribe, and they still could be super tired. So like being tired is not a sign that you should be looking at you know, whether you're a trainer listening to this, don't look at your client and just say, oh, if they're tired, I did a good job. You're a bad trainer if you do that. Do better. And if you're a client, or even if you're just working out yourself, don't just be like, man, I'm exhausted. I must have had a great workout. Be a little bit more analytical about yourself. Demand a little bit more from yourself, you know, as far as physically and mentally. Do a little bit more self-assessment. Even if you're not super confident in, you know, going through the super technical stuff, just have a conversation with yourself and ask yourself, you know, I know I'm super tired, but like, let me think back of all the lifts that I did or all the exercises that I did. And like, did I really do a great job? Could I have done better? Or how did I tire myself so easily? And I think once you start asking yourself those questions, that next session and the next session after that, the next session after that, they're just going to get better and better and better and better. And now that exhaustion, that fatigue is actually going to mean something. Same thing kind of goes for sweating. Again, that could just be another thing. Like, you know, a trainer that I worked with in the past, I'd be like, yeah, man, look how much you're sweating. Like, I'm sweet. You know, I'm a great trainer because my clients are sweating their asses off. And like, again, there's a lot of different factors that control how much an individual sweats. I'll tell you what, right now I'm in a periodization where I'm doing a lot of heavy lifting and kind of a lower volume per workout that I'm doing right now. And I don't sweat a ton, but I'm getting really good results as far as the objective strength output that I'm able to provide. And I'm seeing a lot of increases in muscle endurance and absolute muscle strength. And I sweat not a ton, and that's okay. And then there, you know, I'm going to be entering another period here in a few weeks where it's going to be more cardio heavy, and we're going to kind of take a step back on, you know, the 70%, 80%, 90% of my one rep max lifts for a while. And that I'll probably see a ton of sweating, and then we'll see how that reaction, you know, plays in and how my body reacts to it and all that stuff. But again, it's not necessarily just a true indicator of success, or if I'm not sweating, it's like, man, I didn't do anything today. Again, don't go by just one thing that your body does, whether it's just fatigue or sweating excessively. Again, talk to yourself, talk to your client, get subjective information, and really find out what the fatigue means and, you know, your sweating factor. I can't even believe it. It just sounds stupid coming out of my mouth again. What sweating, you know, means. And I think you're going to go much farther. I'm doing it that way. All right, so moving right along, next myth is stretching before exercising. This is something that, again, has been done for a very long time. You see a lot of workouts starting with stretching. And it's kind of, to me, it's wrong on a couple of different fronts. One being, you know, there's more than just one way to stretch. Obviously, the most common is the static stretch where, you know, you hold a position for X amount of time and that's it. And what I would really encourage, you know, people who want to dive into this a little bit, do some research on the other types of stretching and the benefits of them. Because I actually think there's different types of stretching that are beneficial before a workout. But the static stretch before a workout, especially, there's never enough volume paid attention to it. Imagine, like, if you think about the, you know, if you played youth sports, think about, you know, before every game, you'd line up in a circle and maybe the coach or the team captain would be in the middle and you'd hold a static stretch, you'd count to 10 and everybody would clap. Everybody remembers that. So to me, all you've done is just waste time. You wasted a few minutes of your time where you could, you know, be warming up in a dynamic way that would help you prepare for, you know, prepare your body for what you're about to put it through. Now, we can, again, I can get stuck in the weeds talking about the physiological effects that stretching has in your muscles and why and all that stuff, I would just really, really encourage you to do a little bit more digging on it. Do a little bit more research, because, you know, the great thing about the fitness industry is there's constant research being done and constant, you know, data being driven from outcomes. And the more and more we find out that, you know, holding a stretch for 10 seconds or 15 seconds, 20, even 30 seconds, like before I do a workout, really isn't giving my muscle any change. Now, where static stretching I do feel is important is after a workout, especially a strength workout, you know, where that muscle is concentrically contracting. So contracting as the muscle is shortening, you know, over and over and over and over again, giving it the ability to lengthen back out, I think is important. But, you know, beforehand, you're lengthening that muscle out, again, for a short period of time, and that muscle is just going to revert back to how it's been, you know, as you're going through the workout. So I don't necessarily see that, again, just attacking it with a low-volume static stretch is really going to do you any good. Again, do some research on the other types of stretching and how you can fit that into your workout. I think it'd be a pretty fun endeavor for you. Next myth, targeting body fat. I can't tell you how many people that have come up to me and saying, hey, Pete, give me a good exercise for burning fat, you know, in such and such a place. Hey, I've got excess fat, you know, in my underarms. What's a good exercise for that? I'm here to tell you, and I'm not the first person to, you know, this isn't breaking news here, but a lot of people refuse to believe this, that there is no way to target body fat. It's going to fly in the face of a lot of things you'll see out in the internet, because people want to sell you that idea, just potentially sell a product or a service. But your body is going to control what fat it burns first. Everybody's a little bit different, so you might just by chance, you might get you know, fat burn in the area that you want by doing a particular exercise, or but you know, you do any type of exercise, you create an energy demand from your body, and your body takes, you know, it needs fuel. So it, if it gets to the point where it needs to burn off excess fat to provide that fuel, it's going to take it from wherever the body has the most stored fat, wherever that may be. Obviously, people carry it in different places. You know, obviously, the abdomen is a very common one, and you know, so like when people say, "Hey, you know, lose belly fat," we can't necessarily target that. It's just you might get it because you have a lot of belly fat to give. So that, you know, if somebody's selling you that idea, it might look successful, but it might not be successful for others. So just make sure you're just working hard. You'll get there eventually. If whether it's, you know, the flabby arms, or, you know, I've got excess fat in my face and my neck, or wherever the case may be, my thighs, my hips, just keep working. You know, be persistent, be consistent, and you'll get there. So just don't worry if you can't seem like, oh, I can't, you know, I want to burn fat, you know, in my arms, so I'm just going to do bicep curls and, you know, tricep extensions all day long, and that'll get me there. Just keep doing what you're doing, trust the process, and I promise you'll get there. All right, next myth here, and this is kind of more strength and conditioning related. So, you know, think about if you work with a sports team or just a specific sport athlete in general. The myth being, and this is kind of a newer one that's been a fun thing to kind of dive into, because there's been a lot of arguments on both sides, is lifting on game days. There's still a lot of strength coaches out there that won't do it, but we're starting to see a lot of strength coaches that have, you know, it started out as an experiment of lifting on game day, and now we're starting to see some objective results in how lifting on game day can enhance the athletic performance on game day. And obviously the volume's going to be a little bit different, and you know, as far as the timing and all that stuff might be a little bit different, and depending on the sport, obviously that's going to dictate, you know, exactly what type of lifting, but the fact is, like, oh, we're playing a game tonight that we can't lift. I think that idea has gone from just being challenged to being, it's objectively clear that that idea is just wrong. That lifting on game day objectively can enhance the athletic performance. Also, you know, when you talk about the central nervous system and being able to tap into that, you get, you know, the pretty much all systems in the entire body are just kind of working at a high level, and in all areas of performance, you see a huge, huge benefit. So I'm a huge advocate for lifting on game day. Again, this is where the strength coach has got to be on point as far as really getting into an appropriate volume and appropriate prescription for lifting on game day. But avoiding any type of thing lifting on game day, I think, is a thing of the past. All right, we got just a few left here. This is one of my favorite ones because of the results that it's been able to provide for people. And tell me if this, potentially maybe this has been you, is I cannot do X because I have bad Y. So an example, I can't do squats because I have bad knees. Or, you know, I can't deadlift because I have a bad back. Or, you know, I can't run because I have bad knees, have bad hips, or have bad, you know, and a lot of it is I can't do an activity because I have, you know, this bad joint. And yeah, you're always gonna find, you know, the individuals that where, you know, that is true. You should stay away from a certain type of movement, you know, especially if you have a whether it's chronic or, you know, multiple acute injury history. Potentially you have hardware in a joint that's prohibiting you from that. And obviously, refer to your medical professional for that advice. You know, again, that's where scope of practice is so important as far as which individual within the fitness industry or health industry that you should be listening to for certain things. But if it's just like a chronic pain issue, and, you know, this goes back to, you know, physical therapy, I really, you know, and strong in this belief where I think that a majority of chronic pain issues stem from shitty movement patterns. You know, I can't squat because I have bad knees. No, you have bad knees because you squat like shit. That's the truth. And people very close to me are guilty of that. And I have close friends, I have close relatives that, you know, we've kind of dove pretty deep into their movement patterns and fixed a lot of stuff, especially clients that I've had. You know, I had a gentleman who, you know, is in his 50s. He's like, I haven't been able to, you know, big time skier, his whole family. He's like, I haven't been able to ski in years because my knees just kill. And, you know, we're going through a movement assessment. I'm looking at all his patterns. I'm like, well, no wonder. Like, you squat, you lunge, you do all of these movement patterns with instinctual movement of putting unnecessary pressure into your knee and just having all of these forces being absorbed by that one joint. Where, you know, when you're talking about multi-joint movements, you know, you've got a lot of different musculature there that's available that you're not using. So that's kind of the idea behind it. Obviously, that's one example, but if you're in that camp where you're like, man, like, I, you know, let's say you're doing an at-home workout program and they prescribe, you know, lunges or squats or whatever, and you're like, I gotta do something else because, you know, it hurts my knee. I would love to just have that conversation with you about trying to analyze your pattern, because I would be willing to bet that there's some type of dysfunction within the movement pattern that is causing that pain, at least as a jumping off point. Maybe there's some other issues that are underlying as well, but it's a great jumping off point to make sure that your movement pattern is the best that it can be and that you understand the demands of the movement pattern. I think that's a big thing too, that people don't necessarily understand exactly what needs to happen and the certain pattern that it needs to happen in. you know, especially, you know, squats, deadlifts, and what did I say, lunges, you know, those are all multi-joint movements where there's multiple things that need to happen in a certain sequence to be able to perform that pattern ideally. And if even one of those things is off, that creates a different demand than we're supposed to have on the body to perform that movement. And now you do that over and over and over and over again, and now you're putting unnecessary, whether it's unnecessary tension in the muscle, unnecessary tension on connective tissues, or unnecessary impact and force on a joint. You know, the key word is unnecessary. Your body's not going to like that, and obviously that gives you that pain signal, and then all of a sudden you're going to shy away from something when you know maybe one or two, you know, slight changes, and then obviously adapt that over time and stay consistent with that change, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're back to where you should be. So cannot do X because I have a bad Y. How about I need to fix my Y so I can do the X? All right, we've got two left here. Let's hammer these out real quick. Next myth being, I will lose strength if I take too many days off. So if you're in a strength training regimen, you know, you're training, I don't know, pick a number of days, 3 to 4 days a week, or maybe you're lifting 5 days a week if you do more of like the body part splits or, you know, whatever. But there's so many people out there that I remember you know, some clients I train, if they like go on vacation or whatever, and then they come back, like, yeah, man, I haven't lifted in like a week and a half or 2 weeks or whatever. Like, I probably lost so much. And I'm like, no, you really didn't. Again, that's something that kind of has always been talked about. If somebody's like, oh, if you take too many days off, like, you're going to be back to square one. And it might feel that way. Like, let's say you take a week off, complete week off from training, and you get back into the gym after a week off. It might feel like you've lost something, because the second you get that weight back on and you start pushing that lift again, it might feel like you're weaker because you haven't done it in a while. So, you know, you don't have that memory of what exactly that weight feels like. But now we're starting to see a lot more objective outcomes that, you know, And there's a little bit of a variance here, but they say, you know, anywhere from like 4 to 6 weeks at a minimum is what you need for actual strength decrease. So I guess I take that, you know, it's, you know, as kind of some comfort if you need to take some time off. And I always do suggest doing that. You know, I think periodization is a very important thing to kind of work into your yearly schedule, you know, whether it's a couple months at a time. You know, if you're going hard for, you know, 3-4 months, take a week off, take 2 weeks off, and then get back in. You know, mental health, you know, kind of being right at the forefront there, just like focus on some other stuff, you know, read a couple books, you know, work on kind of the mental game, mental side of things. Maybe analyze, you know, what you're going to be doing next, but it's okay to take a little bit of time off for sure, and I think actually it's pretty beneficial to do so. All right, last one here, and this will be a kind of a relatively short one. The myth being weightlifting for the youth athlete or just youth in general, and I think, you know, think back to every like gym coach or you know, gym teacher or, you know, doctor that you had when you were a kid, and they're like, oh no, you shouldn't lift weights, it's going to stunt your growth and cause damage to your growth plates and yada yada yada. And that has been like objectively debunked time and time and time again. You still see people who sprout that line. It's basically just because, oh, so and so said that a while ago and it must be true. And it's kind of gone from generation to generation of people telling people that, hey, you shouldn't, you know, lift weights until you're X years old and hit puberty. And, you know, what we're seeing is not only in the strength and conditioning world, you're starting to see strength and conditioning programs being implemented at the middle school level, but even just the introduction to, you know, perfecting movement patterns and then resisted movement patterns, you know, with kids, you know, from 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And again, they're not going to go super heavy or anything like that, and they're not going to go super crazy volume, but what we're seeing is that it shows a huge benefit in, you know, bone health and overall, you know, muscle development and growth and just, and even brain development, believe it or not. You know, when you think about a kid that's getting their CNS involved, their central nervous system involved, and especially doing a lot of those multi-joint movement lifts and things like of that nature that a lot of strength and conditioning programs provide, you're just getting that body working at full capacity. And again, no kid is going to be overloaded. No kid is going to be just put to the absolute, you know, brink of what they're capable of, but it's all about kind of an introduction level. At that age, is not only is there nothing wrong with it, but it's actually proven to be super beneficial for kids to get into weightlifting. So if you're a parent, or maybe you're a coach, and you've always been, you know, given that line of like, oh, don't let your kids lift weights yet, wait until they're done with puberty, and as long as, you know, you're in a safe environment, it's being, you know, the program is being instructed or given to your child or your athlete by a qualified individual, you know, that weightlifting for the youth athlete or, you know, like I said, just the youth in general is a great, great thing to pursue. All right, wanted to take a moment here for the spotlight segment. Again, this is where I like to share either somebody who has been a great personal influence to me or somebody who I feel like you would get a benefit out of following on social media or checking out, you know, a product or service or content from a certain individual. And today is somebody who I've never met in person, I've had a few interactions with online, is Ben Bruno, who is a trainer out of California. He can be found on Instagram and Twitter at Ben Bruno Training. And he is, in a lot of circles, is known as like a celebrity trainer. And again, I don't know him personally, but I'd be willing to bet he doesn't like that moniker because, you know, yeah, he does obviously train a lot of celebrities and athletes, and he shares a lot of those workouts, but he never makes it about who he's training. It's always with him and the content that he shares and provides, it's always about, you know, why he's doing what he's doing, which is why I respect the hell out of him and why he's an incredible person to follow. Again, not only because, I mean, he's a pretty funny dude and he trains a lot of really interesting people who are obviously famous and very recognizable. But he always makes sure that even if he's sharing a workout that he's having with, you know, an athlete or an actress or you know, whatever the case may be, that he always provides a ton of value, you know, showing you that, hey, here's a movement we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This is why it's applicable to this person. And here's the benefit that they're getting out of it. And yeah, he mixes in a lot of dry humor as well, which is nice because he's a pretty fun follow from that standpoint as well. But kind of going with this whole theme of this episode of, you know, demystifying a lot of myths that are out there, he does a great job of taking, you know, certain things that are out there and making it easily digestible, you know, that anybody can take what he's doing and being able to kind of analyze it and see how it fits into whatever they're trying to accomplish. So again, at Ben Bruno Training, he's again been somebody who I've looked up to for a long time now. And again, I think he's one of these guys that does everything for the right reasons, especially in an industry. Personal training is so polarizing because you have so many trainers that just want to just kind of do the look at me, look at me, look at me, look who I train. And then you got guys like him where, yeah, he does train a lot of really cool individuals, but it's always about, you know, kind of the movement first and the programming first and wanting to share all that content with you. And he actually does have a lot of free content that's available online as well. If you go to look that up, just a great resource for the industry. And, you know, somebody that I you know, would strive to hopefully meet one day, mostly just because I would love the opportunity to learn from a guy like that. And again, just a great resource for whether you're a trainer or, you know, not, or just somebody who just kind of wanted to get more into analytically thinking about training and, you know, again, maybe laugh a couple times along the way. Go follow him at Ben Bruno Training. Once again, I thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Of course, if you have any feedback or want to have any further discussion, please do not hesitate to reach me at Coach Pete GR on Instagram and Twitter. This has been the 9.8 Podcast.